Okay, the scene starts on page 49 at the second paragraph, and it goes, "Mom was not the kind of matriarch to let her brood hide up under her skirt, clutching her knees, sheltered from the mean old Negroes outside. Under the guise that she was worried about our deteriorating social skills, she suggested we go to Rainier Park and play with the other kids in the neighborhood. She might as well have told us to play in the prison yard at Attica. Rainier Park was an overgrown inner-city rainforest that some Brazilian lumber company needed to uproot. You needed a machete to clear a path to the playground. The sandbox was an uninhabitable breeding ground for tetanus and typhus. Shards of broken glass and spent bullet shells outnumbered grains of sand by a ratio of 4-1. Hypodermic needles nosed through this shimmering sinkhole like rusted punji sticks. Despite our pleas for a pardon, Mom invoked the death penalty and sentenced us to an afternoon at the park. For the record, the condemned ate last meals of liverwurst and mustard on white bread and drank grape Kool-Aid, extra scoop of sugar, before departing. We were somberly alternating turns on the only working swing when two girls about 10 years old, smoking cigarettes and sharing sips from a canned pina colada, approached us. The taller of the two was wearing denim overalls and had so many pink and blue barrettes clipped to their thinning patches of braided hair on her head, it looked as though she was under attack by a swarm of plastic moths. The other girl had an orange hot polyester hot pants and a matching polka dot dot halter top that was so small it barely succeeded in halting her two double B-sized nipples. Her hair was heavily greased into a rigid elliptical disc that sat precariously on the crown of her head. Every few seconds, she'd stoop down to pick up a discarded needle and deposit it in her little red naga hide purse. She resembled a Vietnamese woman wearing a straw hat and toiling in a paddy. I listened for bleeding water buffalo, but heard only the bigger one's mouth. "Get out of our swing now," she shouted at Nicole. Nicole wanted to get off the swing, but she was catatonic with fear. It didn't help that out of sheer nervousness, Christina and I kept pushing, propelling her frame higher and faster. Kicking off their dime store flip-flops, the two badly coiffed bullies marched through the sandbox without a flinch or grimace. A little diaper-clad boy waddled up, blew a kazoo tribunal, and heralded the disaptic to him. "That my sister Fats Betty and her bestest friend Vamp, a nigger on the regular Veronica. They fixin' to kick y'all's ass." Betty and Veronica went into a loud hands-on-hips call-and-response head-bobbing tirade on how they own the entire park, from the calcified jungle gym to the busted teeter-totter. Betty's braids stood on end as she demanded that Nicole get off the swing before she heated up every piece of broken glass in the sandbox, affixed them to the end of one of those pointy 7-Eleven syrupy straws, and blew glass bubbles in her tight black bourgeoisie booty. The thought of this snake-haired demon shoving molten glass in her rectum gorgonized Nicole even further. Her sphincter tightened and her rock-hard butt sat heavy in the swing. Betty picked up a piece of broken glass, lit a Bic lighter, and teasingly passed the piece of glass through the flame, her fireproof fingers impervious to the heat. Nicole's hands fastened themselves to the chains. Her legs spread out in front of her and locked at the knees. Mistaken our silent petrification for hinky insolence, Betty and Veronica tried to rush us. The alcohol must have affected their bullying judgments, because they charged into Nicole chin first, just as her legs were in the high-kicking upstroke of a swing, filled with panic-stricken kinetics. Fast Betty caught a sneaker in the trachea, and Veronica Vamp, a nigger something, or the other, got kicked in the solar plexus. Wiggling in spasmodic waves like dying fish on the filthy playground, the girls somehow managed to find enough air to moan raspy Miles Davis motherfuckers and threats that every ex-con cousin, pyromaniac auntie, serial killer uncle, and pit bull in the neighborhood would soon be coming to put that head out and peel our caps. Within moments, as if some silent gangster medical alarm had gone off, a small army of nepotistic enforcers magically appeared at the entrance near the basketball courts, parting the underbrush and yelling, "Y'all fucking with my cousins?" The three of us instantaneously burst into a waterfall of tears. Begging for a sympathetic detente, Christina and I mindlessly continued to push Nicole's swing. Her whooshing arc through the air, accompanied by the rusty swing set's rhythmic creak, became a foreboding, metronomic pendulum counting down to our deaths. We didn't know, we didn't know. Please leave us alone. A screaming vortex of punches and kicks answered our pleas with a firm ignorantia juris nemenen excusat. The ghetto intelligentsia had kindly provided the young Kaufmans with our first lessons in street smartology. Never, ever cry in public. It only makes it worse. If we hadn't bawled, we might have been let off with a polite cursory thrashing, just to maintain protective appearances. Since we sobbed like wailing refugee babies, we received a full-scale beatdown designed to toughen us up for the inevitable cataclysmic Italian opera ending of black tragedy. Usually when the fat lady sings in a black community, it's at a funeral. I've seen kids get hit by cars, ice cream trucks, bullets, billy clubs, and not even a whimper. The only time it's permissible to cry is when you miss the lottery by one number or someone close to you passes away. Then you can cry once, but only once. There is no brooding. Niggers gotta get up and go to work tomorrow.